The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Wednesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my colleague who's dressed, I can't figure out how he's dressed today. It's certainly not dapper. The Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Fashion guy. Okay. Coming up today, we're going to start with some oldies. When the Drifters sing Under the Boardwalk, are they telling you that you might find some good numbers there? We'll tell you why for one program, Sherman's March, has been going in the wrong direction, and today's Insider Six Pack has so much information that we can't help but be zipping right through it.
Sherman's March, where are these references coming from, Dave? I don't even know which direction Sherman March, and I'm a history buff. I don't know any of it.
Mostly going towards Savannah.
Okay.
Think about it that way. Think about it in that direction, moving towards the shore.
Moving towards the shore.
Civil War.
Civil War, I got that much, but I didn't even, Sherman, he's on the south, right?
No.
He's on the north.
Yes.
Gotcha. That's Ulysses S. Grant is on the north. Sherman's another guy.
No more history.
Enough with the history. Good reference. We'll see how it plays out later in the show. And, of course, the fashion comment. Look at how I'm dressed, man. Kara dressed me today. Kara's my fashion consultant. She tells me whether I'm looking good or you're looking bad or what. And she said that today you weren't dapper. So
she said that.
Well,
we just went on the air a minute ago. Your cell phone's turned off.
I'm Skyping her right now.
I see nothing coming in there. Okay. This is a great way to open a show.
Exactly. Seriously, though, let's open with a first take, Dave. What did you see last night that you want to share with our listeners?
Actually, what I've been watching a lot for the last 24 hours was just as bad as what we just did here. We talked a lot about the Joe Paterno situation yesterday. It's come to a conclusion this morning. He will resign at the end of the season, which we kind of thought was going to happen anyway, regardless of this scandal that's come into play. But as we watch the peruse the media coverage, now, day in and day out, we talk a lot in the sports world about how we love the modern media because it opens so many doors for us. There is so much information out there, so many people who aren't really qualified to be giving that information, that we pick off a lot of bad stuff. A lot of it in our postmortem segments, a lot of times bad lines on sporting events are set up because information's presented wrongly. Well, if you thought they were bad on sports, watching this feeding frenzy in State College the last 24 hours showed us that they might even be worse when it comes to hard news. The trend right now, get there first. And we can understand that it's a ratings-driven culture, so everybody wants to try to be the first to pop a story instead of being the best. ESPN actually being egregious in this case. They've been absolutely awful in their coverage over the last day and a half. Again, almost manufacturing the story as much as covering it. And before we came in today, maybe they reached their own climax in this. After Paterno's resignation, of course, they've got to go live. They've got to get some commentary on it. Well, who's available in the middle of the day, lunchtime on the East Coast? They had Trevor Maddich, Jay Billis, and Stephen A. Smith. This was like watching some little repertory theater on a street corner trying to do Macbeth. These guys were so bad. Billis inexcusably so because he's an attorney. He should have known better than some of the things he said today. But Stephen A. Smith showed us why we love him so much from a sports standpoint. Again, he wants to be entertaining. Some of his opinions might not actually be what he really believes because he's more in the entertainment industry than the news industry. But gosh, was he wrong on what he said today? Inexcusably so. But we like that because he'll be wrong on sporting matters in the future and we'll be able to take advantage because it helps to set the perceptions. Teddy, what do you bring in here in that lovely lavender shirt?
I bring an equal hatred of Jay Billis. And hatred, maybe that's a strong word, but Jay Billis might be my single least favorite talking head. And there's a lot of bad ones out there, but Billis stands out to me as a blowhard who thinks he knows everything and knows, in fact, very little about what's going on around him. But forget the Jay Billis criticism, because this First Take is all about some hype, some kudos. Congratulations, Pius Hines, the German national, $8.9 million, and a little thing called a World Series of Poker bracelet. Note the fact that my wrist does not have one. Every poker player's dream. And I don't care what you want to say. It doesn't matter if you're the grinder character in Rounders or whether you're Matt Damon's character. Everybody dreams of a World Series of Poker bracelet if you play poker. And for the last 4 years, the single biggest tournament in all of poker, the World Series of Poker main event, the $10,000 buy-in event, has been won by a player age 22 or younger. 4 years in a row, so you young guns out there, hey, you got something to shoot for. Congratulations, Pius Hines. And again, $8.7 million versus $5.4 million. Nothing wrong with second place for Martin Stasko, the Czech Republic national, in an all-European final 1-2. But what a dramatic tale of events last night. 9 lead changes in heads-up play in 119 hands. The two key wins for Hines on the night, both times his hand was an ace high, including the hand where he won his bracelet. So, fun thing to talk about, fun World Series of Poker championship to talk about. Next year, Dave, I'm going to be there. I'm going to be in that final table. So help me next year, maybe the year after. Smart money's going to keep taking the over. And, of course, taking the over means we have to shift to Market Watch, because there's an over that we need to talk about. We'll start with betting on the boardwalk. A couple of quotes here. You know, we can step outside the Vegas Video Network studios and be in action in a matter of, what, 3 minutes? Right here on the strip.
3 minutes?
3 minutes, would you say?
There's a janitor.
Huh?
Oh, no, you're in the parking garage, right? You're at the elevator? Down the end of the corridor here.
Yeah. Is there a betting kiosk that I missed?
No, he let me lay 6.5 on the charges. He doesn't take big limits, but from everybody we've talked to in the building, he pays. So, yeah, just down at the end of the corridor, the janitor over there. Yeah, pretty good.
Fair enough.
If you want to
go to a sports book, you can be at a sports book literally, you know, less than 5 minutes walking out the door of anywhere on the Las Vegas Strip or near the Las Vegas Strip. Obviously, that hasn't been the case in New Jersey, but we saw yesterday a decisive vote on a sports betting referendum in New Jersey. It looks like the folks in that state want to do the exact same thing. 66%. 66%. This was supposed to be a tight vote. Nuh-uh. 2 out of 3 said, yeah, we want legal, regulated sports betting in our state. And that's certainly a positive sign.
We hope that number translates to a lot of people in a lot of other jurisdictions. It's one of the issues we've had with this for a long time is, where's the opposition? You know, we just said, well, you've got these voting factions, politicians can't risk doing it. That's been gone for at least a decade, maybe even longer. There really isn't an anti-gambling sentiment strong enough anywhere outside of maybe just a few Bible Belt regions where it's going to be a political hot button at all. So there's a pretty clear vote that the New Jersey people sent across. But now let's get into the other issues. They said they want it. Teddy, can they get it?
Well, here's a quote. We got a couple of quotes from the New Jersey State Senator Ray Lesniak. I always want to say Brock Lesniak, but no, it's Ray Lesniak. And he said, quote, the voters beat the over-under. Hey, he's bringing up sports betting
records. What was it, 62.5, 63? What would the line have been?
The line probably would have been in the 50s. I would think 55. Yep. Yeah, the line really was 50-50.
You know what, on first break, I'll ask the janitor. See which way his action
have him make a number, yeah. Fair enough. Lesniak's quote, the voters beat the over-under. It was a bigger win than we expected. His second quote, this is on the fast track. I want to get it to the governor, to the governor's desk, I should say. Sorry, trying to read here. My own chicken scratch, which is very, very difficult to read. Trying to get it to the governor's desk by the end of the year. So by this time next year, at Monmouth Park, in the casinos, and in the Meadowlands, we'll be packed with people enjoying a quote-unquote new form of entertainment. So he's saying by next year, we're going to see sports betting legal, regulated in New Jersey. I'm taking the over on that number, Dave. 12, 31, 12, give me the over.
Yeah, the problem now is it becomes a federal issue. That all New Jersey said is we want something that we don't have. Well, so many of us do. But now it's a federal issue. It goes back to PASPA, back to what they call the Bradley Bill. Federal law said, no, you can't have this. Can you change that federal law? Yes, you can, because again, if New Jersey says that they want it, where does the opposition come from? It's not like there are opposing factions in the political spectrum. And here's the other interesting one. People will say, well, the professional sports leagues don't want it. And that's the posture they've had to maintain through the years. Oh, we don't want gambling, might impact the outcome of games. Well, it doesn't. They know that it doesn't. They know how much money's bet in the U.S. annually. Just go over to England in the Premier League, and you've been able to bet hand over fist on those games for decades. Very few issues have ever come up out of that. So there's not really an opposition. In fact, if any of the NFL, NBA, NHL commissioners came out and said, you know what, we've taken a look at this. We think it's okay. We think we're good to go with it. That wouldn't even be a blip on the radar screen. No one would even remember that they said that the next day. It's such a non-issue. There's just that little fear factor of people not wanting to take that step. Now, here's the first time voters have clearly said, we want you to take that step.
And a landslide, again, 66% saying, yes, sports betting is okay, we want this. You know, this is a very, very positive sign moving forward. It does leave us with a handful of questions to answer, though. The first question, of course, you know, who is in the way and why? You talked a little bit about how the sports leagues themselves are saying, no, we don't want any sports betting, when they know darn well that their ratings depend on sports bettors and their interest in the ballgame. Another key question, of course, is there actually any money for New Jersey to be made? You know, we talk about the state tax in Nevada and the revenue that Nevada derives from sports betting. Well, guess what? The tax in this state, 0.25%. And that's something the books are willing to eat, so the bettors don't even feel it. New Jersey, don't know if they're going to accept that 0.25% as a reasonable amount for the state to keep. And, of course, once you start increasing that number of where the tax rates get higher, all of a sudden the 11 to 10 formula doesn't work quite as well. And, of course, perhaps the most pressing question of the bunch, is this mean that Joe Lupo, our old friend from the Stardust, who's been toiling in New Jersey for a decade now, does this mean that Joe Lupo is going to actually have to do something?
Toiling in New Jersey for a decade. Yeah, making big money, working about an hour and a half a day. We're going to talk about these issues tomorrow when we come back, because there are some financial realities that make this maybe not quite as lucrative as what they think in New Jersey. That'll be part two when we come back tomorrow for Market Watch.
And when we come back right here, well, before we even think about coming back right here, let's say what we have to say before we do the close of the segment. And that, of course, means asking you, our viewers, for emails. Because, boy, we're getting great questions every single day. Keep those emails coming. SportsDay@covers.com. You can follow us on Twitter now. We're going to be tweeting during the show, before the show, after the show. At Vegas Sports Day, all one word, at Vegas Sports Day at Twitter. Please sign up now. And, of course, get involved in the community. Covers.com, in the posting forums, there are active threads and discussions going right now. Great way to get involved with other sports bettors from around the globe. When we come back, now I can tease what happens when we come back. And you already know what's going to happen. It's post-mortem time.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Let me know when I'm live. Hi, everybody. This is Bridget Magnus of Getting Real Estate in Vegas, and you are watching the Vegas Video Network.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical gowns on. It's time for the postmortem. We take you deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
Let's start with Texas A&M today. And the Aggies opened the season ranked number 8 in the AP poll, number 9 in the USA Today, quote-unquote, coaches poll, although we all know that poll gets filled out by the assistant water boy, not the head coach. But someone apparently thought that Mike Sherman had the program headed in the right direction. And the arc was easy to see. I mean, the Aggies went 4-8 in Sherman's first year on the job. They went 6-7, made a bowl the second year, Last year, 9-4, a clear improvement all three seasons. They had 18 starters returning and looked like they were ready to take the next step. So here we are. It's November. What do we have? Well, we have a Texas A&M team that is now 5-4. They've already lost as many games this year as they did last year. They still have tough games to go against Kansas State and Texas yet to be played. And the potential is very real here for a 500 finish for this ultra-hyped Aggies team that opened the season in the top 10. So when we break down the Aggies in 2011, Mr. Malinsky, it begs the question, what's gone wrong?
We talk about media perceptions a lot, and maybe this is the classic example. And it's unfortunate that Sherman and his team get perceived this way. So the question is, why were they so disappointing? What went wrong at College Station? Problem was, they were never that good to begin with. It was the media perception that got it wrong. And the problem is, since the media are the ones that cover it, it's what happened at A&M, not why in the hell did we have them number 8? How did we screw up so badly in our perceptions? What was so wrong with our poll? Again, that's the perception that you won't see. Here's the issue. A&M wasn't a top 10 team. The Big 12 has not been that strong of a conference the last 2 years. So the focus is, where was A&M when they stepped outside the conference in the bowls? With the last two bowls, they played Georgia and LSU. They lost by a combined 45 points. They weren't competitive in either game. You look at those two games and you don't see a top 10 program. Now, they actually have been a little bit better this year than last year, despite the fact that their record won't show it and it won't be perceived by others. But here's the problem. Sometimes when you get better, you end up taking a step backwards. When you're better, you challenge your opponents, you play your game instead of just adjusting to theirs. Well, A&M's game, the way they want it, is to go up-tempo. Well, what happens when you go up-tempo against superior opponents? You give them more opportunities to beat you. And what we found out about A&M is the depth isn't there yet. 4 losses this year. In 3 of them, they led by double figures at halftime. In those 4 losses, they were outscored 108-30 in the second half, and it's actually worse than that. It was sitting on 108-15 until they got the last 2 touchdowns against Oklahoma when they were down 41-10 in the fourth quarter. That's the problem when you lack depth and you go to that fast tempo. Let's look at those 4 games for the pace. Against Oklahoma State, 169 total offensive plays. Against Arkansas, 170. The overtime loss to Missouri, 173 plays. And Saturday's loss to Oklahoma, 168. When you're going to go out there against those kind of teams that want to play fast on their own and try to match tempo, you better have that depth. A&M doesn't have it yet. If you look at the Cleveland Browns the last couple of weeks on offense, you're certainly going to see struggles. Only 28 points over 3 games. And that's going to happen when your offensive line is beat up. Eric Steinbach, Tony Pachos are out. We've talked about their running back situation, you know, on today's show, and will again, and Sider Sixpack today. Peyton Hillis, Montario Hardesty out. They played without Muhammad Massaquoi on Sunday, one of their better receivers. So obviously there's not much happening there. But you need to do a post-mortem check and see that there might even be less than meets the eye. Those 28 points over the last 3 games, which looks like a D minus that you would grade them out at, is that the true grade for those performances?
No, D minus is not the appropriate grade for the Cleveland Browns on offense over the last 3 weeks. They deserve a big fat F minus perhaps. Look, go back and look at these 28 points over the 3 games again. You know, that's bad. You know, it's not a disaster, but it's bad. But how about the fact that more than half of those points, 15 of them in fact, came on field goals of 50 yards or longer from Phil Dawson. They haven't even been able to crack the 35-yard line in these ball games. So when they beat Seattle 6-3 2 weeks ago, the points came on field goals of 52 and 53 yards. No team in the history of the NFL had ever won a game in which all their points came on 50-plus yard field goals. They've scored 2 touchdowns over the course of the last 3 ball games. Both of those touchdowns came in the fourth quarter when trailing by double-digit margin. On Sunday, Colt McCoy was knocked down 12 times as a result of contacts, 4 sacks, which shows the lack of respect that opponents have for Cleveland's running game. And, you know, there can really be a tendency for sloppiness when we talk about the teams on the extreme end of the spectrums, whether it's the Green Bay Packers offense that the markets have had a very difficult time adjusting to, with Aaron Rodgers playing at a different level than just about any QB in football right now. Truly amazing plateau for that Packers offense at the high end. And then we look at the low end. Green Bay might be 1.4 yards per pass better than any other team. Well, Cleveland is simply at the very bottom here. Don't get lazy adjusting for the Browns down. You can't just label an offense or a defense bad. The Cleveland Browns offense right now is a degree of awful that goes a little bit off the charts.
When we come back, we've got an email from a University of Michigan alum who knew that they could spell. And we're going to go inside the numbers to talk a little bit about Pat Fitzgerald and Northwestern. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
I'm Courtney Leone. This is Vegas Video Network. You want me to mention awkward silence? Let's do that then. Okay. Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good? Better?
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Before we go inside the numbers, it's time to answer your viewer emails, getting great questions every day. Again, that email address, sportsday@covers.com. And we're going to start today with a question from Jack. Jack asks, I'd love to hear Dave give a global overview of his step-by-step approach to breaking down football games. Also, he seems to have a lot of database resources at his disposal, and I'd be especially interested in what kinds of reports he generates. Best regards.
We could do a whole show on this. We'll try to break it down a little bit a day at a time. And as we talk about specific games, we'll put a lot of that information into play. But here's the one thing you probably don't want to hear. There's no database. Almost all of these numbers are kept week by week by hand. I've got a college workbook that I keep, I create it myself, generate the charts. These go back 21 years now. Here's the problem. College football is not conducive to databases. The seasons are too short. Most of the teams are only going to play 12 games. You're not getting a lot of data points. And by the time you get enough data points, your season's two-thirds over. But there are so many things that happen inside of a game. In the far right column of these charts, talk about reasons why games should not fit into a database. And it's amazing how many games come up with one or two items that just don't plug in. We just talked about Texas A&M Oklahoma and that fourth quarter. Look at the second half of that game. There was a very strong wind blowing in Norman. In the second half, the team playing with the wind outscored the team going against the wind 43-0. Hard to just plug those raw numbers into a computer and have it make any sense. So a lot of these trends and angles are common sense things that we actually look up by hand. We do not have a college football database and don't work with one. And even if we had one, I'm not sure we'd use it. Our next question, and it's Go Blue time, apparently, from Dan, formerly in Ann Arbor. And this is mostly directed towards Teddy. What are your favorite, most trustworthy online betting sites? Currently, I am using, and we have to censor this part, Dan. We saw who you're using. We have to censor that. We're still in the state of Nevada. That janitor who gives us good numbers down the hall isn't going to help us at all if someone's coming in to arrest us. I've used them for 2 years. They've been very reliable and trustworthy. But to make that jump in becoming a pro, I need to expand the number of sites I use. However, I'm afraid to give my money to a site I don't trust. Could you help me out there? And now part two, and for those of you who didn't go to Michigan, you can ignore this thing. Teddy, I know you've said you don't have a rooting interest in any teams, but how pissed were you at the end of that Michigan versus Iowa game Saturday when the Blue were robbed of that touchdown? We all know it was a touchdown, and as an alum, you have to have some rooting interest, right?
Let's start with part one of the question. Dan is asking us for recommendations. And we talked on the show yesterday that we're not really in a position to appropriately have recommendations for you. That being said, at covers.com, right on the homepage, there is a list of where to play. Sports books that do accept U.S. customers and U.S. clients. And you can click right on that link from the homepage at covers.com to give you some ideas of what books you may want to get involved with. When it comes to the Michigan question, no, I think the answer is no. If it'd be one thing if Michigan was in position to win a national title and something, and if it was that type of a game, I probably would root for the Wolverines if they were, you know, in the Final Four or, you know, playing for a national title. But for a normal regular season game, let me tell you what happened in Ann Arbor my senior year. My senior year, when they knew that I was stuck and I wasn't going anywhere and I wasn't going to transfer, they left me in my financial aid package with something they called unmet need, about $4,000 worth for my senior year. I ate ramen noodles the whole year. I worked three jobs. I barely graduated. Thank you, U of M. I appreciate that. And then when the last team that I loved as a fan, the last team I loved was the Fab Five team. I mean, I loved that team. I watched every game, literally, for both years that everyone was in town. Loved that team. Michigan, what did they do to honor the Fab Five? Oh, they decided as self-imposed sanctions to take down the banners and vacate all the victories. Okay, the NCAA didn't tell them to do that. Michigan made the choice to do that themselves. I was mad. I'm still mad. I don't donate to the University of Michigan, and I sure as hell don't root for U of M. Yeah, they're going to win something big, I'm excited. But for some game in Iowa, come on. You know, just as happy when we lose as we are when we win, if I'm cashing a ticket on the Wolverines or against them. That being said, whew, good rant there for the middle of the show. Dave, let's go inside the numbers.
His whole senior year, he couldn't go to Zingerman's.
I couldn't, and I lived down the street from Zingerman's.
Yeah.
It was brutal. It was absolutely brutal. And I'll tell you, there was a way, I don't want to speak of my morals, but there was a way to get out of Zingerman's without paying at the time. And at some points, we did take advantage of that, I will admit. And someday I will send my retribution. Or retribution? What's the word I'm looking for?
Retribution.
To Zingerman's. Hasn't happened yet.
One of the things we should remind you of course, when you see that email posted out there every day, you can ask questions. You can also send gift certificates. Zingerman's does a terrific mail order business. Just keep that in mind if we hit a few play a days between now and Christmas. Time to go inside the numbers. And when we talk about categorizing outside of databases, here's another one that we look up by hand. Because we look for patterns that have a certain logic to them. Now, a lot of times on this show, we're going to talk about Pat Fitzgerald, the Northwestern coach, and how absolutely terrific he's been as a road underdog. Not just covering the spread, but winning games. He gets his kids to scrap. He's an excellent game planner, so they overachieve. Like you saw in Lincoln last week, when they upset Nebraska, literally winning the game wire to wire. But there's a flip side to that. When you win those games, people think, wow, that program is better. They're coming around. When the talent really hasn't changed that much, you don't see a lot of NFL draft choices on his team. And that same mentality of getting kids to scrap hard against a superior opponent sometimes doesn't work when you step down in class. You don't get that same energy level, and the raw talent isn't there to beat someone up. So there are a couple of elements that come into play for today's play inside the numbers. And it's telling you about Pat Fitzgerald as a home favorite. Note that Northwestern in general has very little home field advantage. They do not draw at all in Evanston. So over the past 10 years, only 4-19 against the spread as a home favorite. In the Pat Fitzgerald years, that hasn't changed. Only 2-10 against the spread in the dozen games under Fitzgerald in this particular role. Note this Saturday, they're a big home favorite out there against Rice. This is not a situation that's been bringing Northwestern backers any money, unless, like Teddy, they'll bet against their own school.
And, of course, Rice already has an upset win this year over another Big Ten. No, I'm not going to call them a power, Big Ten team, when they knocked off Purdue back in week number two. Coming up, the news you need to know in our Insider Six-Pack.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Yeah, it's that time. We gotta crack open the six-pack of insider news and notes for the coming football and basketball cards. And we're going to start in West Virginia, where the passing stats are going to show that Dana Holgorsen is having a tremendous positive effect on the Mountaineers this season. That being said, their overall season has been a disappointment. Yeah, the passing numbers are good. Not much else has worked perfectly for Holgorsen. They already have two Big East losses. They've given up 118 points in the last three ball games. My clients and I were able to catch going against West Virginia this past weekend. Didn't think we'd get the outright win with Louisville, but I wasn't disappointed at all when we did. So it sounds like Holgorsen is getting ready to crack the whip a little bit right now, and we definitely have a story to follow in the days ahead. He's talking about taking only 55 players on Saturday's road trip to Cincinnati instead of the usual allotment that the NCAA allows, 70 players. So that'd be 15 fewer players on that West Virginia sideline. His quote, "I'm pretty serious about it. We're going to take who wants to pull for his teammates and who wants to be all in," another poker reference, "on this thing. Not guys that pout and mope because they're not playing or any of the rest of it. We're going to be a united team, and the only way I know how to get that accomplished is to make sure we're only taking people that are focused and headed in the right direction." So it sounds like Holgorsen's looking to unite his team by keeping half of them out. We've seen other first-year coaches struggle as they try to transition the attitude of a program. Certainly look no further than Todd Graham's struggles with the Pitt Panthers so far this season. And right now, Holgorsen having a bit of a problem between the kids that are buying into what he's trying to do and those who aren't quite so happy with the first year of the coaching transition.
Let's go to some more of these college football edges that you won't necessarily know how to find from a database. Akron and Kent play this week. Most of you won't care. But you should. Late in the season, we have a lot of rivalry matchups and a lot that we can do with them. How many of you know that Akron and Kent are 12 miles apart, campus to campus? Actually, about 11 and a half if you take the most direct route. That makes us a big rivalry. And especially for teams that aren't very good, the games you would ignore most sometimes are the ones you should be paying the most attention to because the rivalry matters. If you're at Kent or at Akron, you're not going to a bowl game. You don't have a whole lot to shoot for. Very rarely are you going to compete for the conference championship. So that game against your neighbor, what gets a lot of local publicity, because you're hanging out with these kids throughout the year. You're scrimmaging with them on the basketball courts. You're doing all these little things to build that rivalry up. And what tends to happen? Well, the worse a season you're having, the more important beating your rival becomes. So over the next couple weeks, we're going to focus on a lot of underdog series in these rivalries. Take a close look at this one, where you don't have much home field advantage either. In the last eight meetings, the underdog, 7-1 against the spread, only two times in those eight games did the favorite even have the lead at the end of regulation. There were just two wins in regulation, one other win in overtime, five outright underdog upsets. You want to look for some of these out-of-the-way settings.
Yeah, it's fun. We get to mention Akron not once, twice in the same show. And where else are you going to find that type of Akron reference except for right here on Vegas Sports Day? So, of course, the bottom line is my co-host wanted me to say that we're zipping right through this segment in reference to the Akron being called the Zips. I guess I'm contractually obligated to say that sort of zipping on through a type of tease. But this is what I have to deal with daily basis. I have to deal with a co-host who wants these obscure references that he throws into the script that I'm reading for you now. But the bottom line for Akron, and yes, we've just zipped right through it. We're not zipping right through this, though. One of the key things to look for and talk about in early season college basketball, we just talked about the Akron football program. Now we're switching over to hoops. Akron in play tonight. And teams are allowed to cycle in preseason international trips. I believe it's once every 4 or 5 years that teams are allowed to make those international trips. And they can be very significant in getting teams out of the gate with a very good start, because it's not just the games that they're allowed to play. It's also all the practices over the summer that other teams don't get. So we saw the Akron Zips have such a road trip this past August. They went up to Canada and went 5-0 against the various Canadian teams. They won those games by an average of more than 24 points per game. 10-day road trip in August builds team chemistry, gets more practices, gets them some playing time, and it certainly helps some of the Akron newcomers blend in with the established veteran core. We saw transfer Chauncey Gilliam averaged 14 points per game on that road trip. We saw freshman Nick Harvey average 11.5 points per game on that trip as well. So one note for tonight's contest, don't mark necessarily this Akron thing down as a plus for tonight, because Mississippi State also had a trip this year playing 5 games in Europe.
Of course, if the zip made, we were all prepared. When we go to Tucson tonight, it can be time to put up our dukes. Duquesne, like Akron, also had one of those trips to Canada. It sort of mirrored the Akron trip a little bit. The Dukes went 4-1 on theirs. Again, built a little bit of chemistry, especially mattered in the front court. Duquesne's got a lot to replace. They have some guys who are going to be working into the rotation that may not necessarily be ready yet, but they're much more ready than if they hadn't taken that trip. Rebounding a problem for the Dukes last year, also a problem for them on that trip. No particular Duquesne player even averaged 5 rebounds per game. But the one guy who was playing a little bit better, and I think he's going to be a key over the course of the year, Andre Marhold, 6'7", he was a little bit too light when he came on campus last year. He averaged 11.6 points, 4.8 rebounds on the trip. They said that he's put on 15 pounds since the end of last season. And if you've ever played college basketball in Eastern Canada, that could be 15 pounds of poutine. Not exactly the best way to put it on, but whatever works.
15 pounds of poutine? Or booty? What were you saying?
You've never had poutine?
I have not ever had poutine. I don't know that I've ever had poutine. What is it?
For our Canadian viewers, send some emails in with your favorite versions of poutine. Actually, going to sound a little bit disgusting. It's basically French fries with cheese curds and gravy. That's it.
Poutine?
Poutine.
I'd rather have poontang. Georgia returned to, got all 3 running backs back to practice. Sorry, Georgia returned to practice yesterday, and so did all 3 of their suspended running backs from last week. We saw the starter Isaiah Crowell get back into play, Carlton Thomas and Ken Malcolm, the 3 guys who were suspended by Mark Richt for some off-field incidents. Crowell's going to be back in a starting situation this week. Thomas is going to be number 2, replacing former number 2 Richard Samuel, who had ankle surgery and may not be back until Georgia's bowl game.
Talked about the Cleveland Browns earlier in today's show. We thought we'd update you on kind of a quandary that they're in. They have no running backs, you know, right now. Peyton Hillis, injured, not going to play again this week. Montario Hardesty, injured, looks like he's not going to play this week. The only 2 guys they have on the roster, Chris Ogbayana and Thomas Clayton, 18 carries for only 38 yards against Houston on Sunday. This is when you would think they'd be out looking in the free agent market, but they can't get a clarification on Hillis as to whether he should go on IR and be gone for the season or if he can still play. So they're left literally twiddling their thumbs. It looks like yet one more week that Cleveland will take the field without an NFL-caliber running back.
We are not going to twiddle our thumbs here. When, in fact, when we come back, we're going to put all of this news to work for you. It's money time.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David from. You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Okay, guys, let's raise the roof. It's money time. Remember, this segment of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com for all the key information that you need in every sport. Covers covers the number. Let's go to Philadelphia, where the Temple Owls tonight, 13-point favorites over Miami of Ohio, total 44.5. It's more Mac football to talk about. The Mac's been kind to us on this show in recent weeks, Mr. Malinsky, but this game, it doesn't seem to have the same type of edges that we were able to take advantage of with that Toledo over last night.
Got some mystery elements in play here, which is why we're not likely to get to the windows unless there's some big line movement over the course of the day. Certainly a plus 14 might lead to a trickle. One of the things you'll notice right off the bat, a lot of empty seats in Temple. And as we've talked about on the show in the past, the major urban universities tend to not draw terribly well. If you live in Philadelphia, you have other entertainment options than to go to a Temple game. A lot of the fan base doesn't live in that area. You tend to move on. Temple has If we're going to list, let's say, the 10 toughest campuses in Division I, Temple's in that bottom 10. That's a tough, tough neighborhood. But yet you'll note that in MAC play, Temple still has a bit of a home field advantage, even though the crowd counts are low. See, why is that? Temple's got a bit of an edge, as does Buffalo. It's one of the few times MAC schools have to get on a plane. So many of these schools are in Ohio, in Michigan, even Ball State over in Indiana, where you're busing to your game. You're not having to fly. That adds that extra travel element in play that does benefit Temple a little bit. Here's what doesn't benefit Temple. Bernard Pierce, who you'll see in the NFL probably next year from what we're hearing. We don't think he's going to come back for his final year of eligibility. He won't play tonight because of a concussion. Now, at first you might say that's not that big a deal. Matt Brown has had some really good numbers. But Brown does well because he's a change of pace guy. He's only 5'7", about 150, 155 pounds. He's a change of pace from Pierce. He's not exactly an every down back. And now an opponent has a chance to game plan specifically for him. But the big question, Chris Coyer, not only starting a quarterback tonight, but we've been told he's going to start a quarterback the rest of the season. He's inexperienced. This will be his first career start. He's got off-the-charts rushing numbers. 28 carries for 353 yards. He's averaging over 12.5 yards per rush. He's a good talent, but we don't know that much about him. Now, a Miami defense that hasn't given up a touchdown in seven quarters, pretty big challenge for Coyer tonight, enough to not have us all that excited about going to the windows.
Yeah, and this one 100%, Dave. When it comes to, I'm a little bit reluctant to stand in front of Temple off a loss because this team, under Steve Adagio in his first year on the job, man, they've been dynamite after a defeat. And, of course, losing a very disappointing game against Ohio in a weeknight game last week, I would expect that the Owls are going to come with full focus tonight. And that makes me a little bit reluctant to step in front of on a handful of occasions already this year. As I mentioned, we've seen them just come out like gangbusters following a defeat. And I wouldn't be surprised if that happens here. That being said, you know, plus 14, I might need a hook off that to have a rooting interest in this ball game, shall we say. But Miami O's playing much better football right now than they were early in the season. And that's something the betting markets tend to miss. The stats later in the season are going to reflect a lot of what happened in September and October that aren't really relevant for a mid-November game in the MAC. And Miami O, their defense has been dynamite the last couple of weeks. They have a positive momentum. They have a two-game winning streak. And, oh, by the way, you know, this team won the conference last year. They're not chumps. It's going to take 14.5, I think, for me to get to the window. But if I see it, I will pull the trigger on the Redhawks. I don't know that I'm going to see it, though. Let's go to the Hardwoods. You want to go to the Hardwoods?
Let's go to the Hardwoods. We've got nothing for you in the football. We may have nothing for you in the basketball either. Not a surprise in the marketplace this morning. All three of the teams in the tournament that opened on Monday night drew money this morning. We can understand why. Because, okay, St. John's has a game under their belts. Mississippi State has a game under their belts. Arizona has a game under their belts. All three played sloppy. There's an expectation they'll play better tonight. And we agree with parts of that. But now here's the flip side. We had talked about two of those opposing teams, Akron and Duquesne, having taken those summer trips, teams that'll be a little bit quicker out of the gate than they would be otherwise. So we're not sure if we're ready to fade those line moves yet. I'm not sure I want to fade it with Akron necessarily because, again, Mississippi State also had a preseason trip. Mississippi State was sluggish Monday, but that was a difficult opponent for them to play. Eastern Kentucky runs a lot of those old Pete Carril sets. They use a 1-3-1 zone on defense, stuff that's difficult to play if you don't game plan for it. State didn't game plan. They just said, we'll go out, we'll play our game, we'll see what happens. They had an off night. Duquesne could be a temptation, again, bringing that experience factor into Arizona. But if you're going to buck Arizona in the McHale Center, you'd rather do it by slowing the tempo, not by running with them. Duquesne's going to run with them tonight. We don't like that strategy when there's a talent disadvantage.
And they're calling this a tournament, obviously. For whatever reason, saying that it's a tournament as opposed to a regular season game seems to attract viewers. And it gets, of course, the ESPN cameras involved where we have games on ESPNU and ESPN2 this evening. This isn't a tournament. All the games are already preset. Even the games in Madison Square Garden next Thursday for this 2K tournament, Texas A&M versus Mississippi State, St. John's versus Arizona, those are already preset. We're talking about tournaments. You're supposed to be, all right, if you win, you move on to the next one, or I don't know. It just bugs me. Tournaments being a tournament game being played on the home courts, not even neutral site games. It's a tournament in name only. And, of course, Dave talked a lot about the issues with tonight's contest. And, again, We talk about very early season college hoop, the first week or two. This is not a time of year that you want to go gangbuster, guns a-blazing, firing away on every game that you see on TV. It's a time to be very patient, pick and choose your spots, watch as much as you can, and see what you can learn to give you good opportunities to bet down the road.
So what did we do today to tie it all in from the start? We became Stephen A. Smith. We became ESPN. We rose the roof at the top of this segment. We got you all excited. We got you all on Twitter, hopefully tweeting back to us. And what are we going to give you at the end for the play of the day? We got nothing. At the current prices, there's nothing on this board worthy of play of the day status. So for Wednesday, we're back to plus zero. And for those of you who didn't catch the phrasing the first time we used it, if you're going to play every day, in a given year, that means you're going to have 120 to 150 losing days, even if you're doing very well. So plus zero puts you ahead of one of those losing days. For today, we'll break even because we've got plenty coming up for you tomorrow.
And that, of course, is going to wrap it up for the Wednesday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll talk to you mañana.